Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's Shelly Nunchucks on the Shelly Nunchucks Show with my little furball co-host, Jackie Chan Kitty. And this little kitty just wants me to go to bed. Well, once again, it's Wednesday night, and it's an awesome, awesome week. And I got to tell you, I'm so super pumped, and only me. I don't know. Everybody else might think I'm nuts, but, you know, everybody has special days. But next Monday, I actually took the day off to celebrate Jackie Chan's birthday. Wow! Jackie Chan turns 60 April 7th. So I just have to celebrate it. And as you all know, I've actually been on this wonderful change of way of eating. And people say, oh, it's a diet. I go, no, it's a way of eating. Because if you're dieting, and that's actually not to eat. So I've just been changing, and I only get one cheat day a month. So I'm saving it for Sunday, like Monday, so I can have celebration, Jackie Chan marathon. So I'm so super pumped, and I can't wait. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you all know the man himself, Jackie Chan, My idol. Mario, I love the guy to death, and I love his work. I mean, if you don't know who Jackie Chan is, maybe you've, like, been hiding underground your whole life, because even if you don't watch tons of martial arts films, the two words, Jackie Chan, there's no rhyme or reason or anything to, you know, have a definition of behind Jackie Chan, but Jackie Chan is the man. He is the man. So, tonight, I guess I kind of have to be brave. I cannot sing, and I was hoping that people would call in and help me. Telephone number is 347-989-1473. Once again, the telephone number to call in is 347-989-1473. And what I need help with, I wanted to say happy birthday to Jackie Chan. Now, I'm not a singer, and I hope I don't break any windows, but before I sing happy birthday, I'm going to actually bring up the official Jackie Chan website. So I want to talk a little bit about Jackie. This is exactly from, so the pictures are actually from the website. I get a lot of pictures, and I guess the two pictures that I found were actually is on his website. I didn't even realize that. So, yeah, I know, Jelly Nunchucks, don't you know about all this stuff about Jackie Chan? But anyway, just information on him. Here we go. Jackie Chan was born in Hong Kong on April 7, 1954. His parents, Charles and Lee Chan, named him Chan Kong Sing, which means born in Hong Kong. Jackie weighed 12 pounds when he was born, and his mother required surgery to deliver him. Jackie's parents were so poor that they had to borrow money from friends to pay the doctor. And I did hear that Jackie Chan's mom was pregnant with Jackie Chan for a full year. I'm not kidding. I did hear this, but it doesn't state that. I heard that somewhere, you know, and he was 12 pounds. Wow, that's a big baby. His mom must have been super mom to give birth to Jackie. Next thing it says, although Jackie's parents were poor, they had steady jobs at the French embassy in Hong Kong. Charles was a cook and Lily was a housekeeper. Together, the Chan family lived on Victoria Peak in Hong Kong. When Jackie was young, his father would wake him early in the morning, and together they would practice kung fu. Charles Chan believed that learning kung fu would help build Jackie's character, teaching him patience, strength, and courage. When Jackie was 7 years old, Charles took a job as the head cook at the American Embassy in Australia. He felt that it would be best for Jackie to stay behind in Hong Kong to learn a skill, and so enrolled him in China Drama Academy, where Jackie would live for the next 10 years of his life. During Jackie's time at the school, he learned martial arts, acrobatics, singing, and acting. The school was meant to prepare boys for a life in the Peking opera. Chinese opera was very different from any other kind of opera. It included singing, tumbling, and acrobatics, as well as martial arts skills and acting. Students at the school were severely disciplined and were beaten if they disobeyed or made mistakes. Yes. I mean, imagine this. Imagine you're a little kid, you know, with a bunch of other kids, and you're disciplined. You know, you get beaten. And it's like, this is stuff that I've actually, you know, read in his book, because I have his biography. It says, I Am Jackie Chan. And both my books, actually, they kind of fell apart. And my sister, Charlie, she actually got me one of the books. And I guess I love the book so much, I kind of, you know, like the Velveteen Rabbit, if you love something so much, it kind of falls apart, but you still love it no matter what. So the two books I have, I Am Jackie Chan, they fell apart, but I taped the pages back together. And, you know, I was actually, you know, reading about that, and it was really, really hard. So if Jackie didn't do a flip, you get a beating. I mean, these things, that was severe discipline. You just can't picture this as a kid. You know, if you're not doing right, you get severely disciplined. I mean, it's worse than a spanking. I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, just to really think about that. It was a very harsh and difficult life, but Jackie had nowhere else to go, so he stayed. He rarely saw his parents for many years. Well, at the China Academy, Jackie made his acting debut at age 8 in the Cantonese movie Seven Little Valiant Fighters, Big and Little Wong Tin Ba. He later teamed with other opera students in a performance group called the Seven Little Fortunes. Fellow actors Samuel Hung and Yun Yao were also members. Years later, the three would work together and become known as the Three Brothers. As Jackie got older, he worked as a stuntman in his extra in Hong Kong film industry. And I'm just bringing the page up, because this is stuff from his website. Next thing it says, when Jackie was 17, he graduated from the China Drama Academy. Unfortunately, the Chinese opera was no longer very popular, so Jackie and his classmates had to find other work. This was difficult because at the school, they were never taught how to read or write. The only work available to them was unskilled labor or stunt work. Each year, many movies were made in Hong Kong, and there were always a need for young, strong stuntmen. Jackie was extraordinary, athletic, and inventive, and soon gained a reputation for being fearless. Jackie Chan would try anything. Soon he was in demand. Yeah, he would try anything. I mean, if you've seen this man's film, oh, my gosh. People are like, man, he's crazy. He's really crazy, but believe it or not, you know, he actually calculates from, you know, what he does. He pitches like a drum. And when he's doing movements, he goes boom, 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 boom. Now, this doesn't say on the website, but then again, this is, you know, I'm Shelley Nunchucks, and I know a lot about Jackie. And when he's calculating the choreography for a fight scene, he's thinking of a drum. He's going boom, 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 boom. So he has to calculate everything, and it's every step that he's calculated in his head. So that's actually how Jackie thinks. And it says, okay, over the next few years, Jackie worked as a stuntman, but when the Hong Kong movie industry began to fail, he was forced to go to Australia to live with his parents. He worked in a restaurant and on a construction site. It was there that he got the name Jackie. A worker named Jack had trouble pronouncing Kong Sing and started calling Jackie Little Jack. That soon became Jackie, and the same name stuck. And it says here, Jackie was very unhappy in Australia. The construction work was difficult and boring. His salvation came in the form of a telegram from a man named Willie Chan. Willie Chan worked in the Hong Kong movie industry and was looking for someone to star in a new movie being made by Lowei, a famous Hong Kong producer-director. Willie had seen Jackie at work as a stuntman and had been impressed. Jackie called Willie and they talked. Jackie didn't know it, but Willie would end up becoming his best friend and manager. Soon, Jackie was on his way back to Hong Kong to star in New Fist of Fury. It was 1976, and Jackie was 21 years old. Once Jackie got back to Hong Kong, Willie Chan took control over Jackie's career. To this day, Jackie is quick to point out that he owes his success to Willie. However, the movies that Jackie made for Lowei were not very successful. The problem was that Jackie's talents were not being used properly. It was only when Jackie was able to contribute his own ideas that he became a star. He brought humor to martial arts movies. His first success was Snake and Eagle Shadow, that was followed by Drunken Master, another blockbuster. And Jackie's first ever directing job, Fearless Hyena, all were big hits. Jackie was becoming a huge success in Asia. Unfortunately, it was many years before the same could be said of his popularity in America. And this, I do remember, when I was a kid growing up, I didn't really know who Jackie Chan was, but around that time, which was on his website, I do remember, you know, that seeing him in the Cannonball Run film. This was the very first time. I'm a little kid. And now, with today's things out there with technology and internet, you can find out so much, but as I was growing up, we did not have the technology to find things out what we did today. So whenever I saw Jackie, if I missed the credits, I would see his face, but I'd have no idea who he was. At that time, where it's reading on his website about when he came to America, he didn't really speak English too much. The thing is, he was a big star in Asia, but over here at the time, an actor named Burt Reynolds was actually, you know, very big here in America and such. So, you know, no one knew who Jackie was at the time. But the thing about Jackie Chan in the Cannonball Run movie, I remember he didn't say a word. Everybody was fighting on the film in Cannonball Run. He just smiled, and he took out the guys. He was like in a white suit, and he took the guys out that were causing all problems, and he had this big smile. I think he actually ripped his pants, the suit, because he was like walking away. I mean, things happen to Jackie, and just things happen on set to him, and he's known for, you know, he's also been in the Guinness Book of World Records a couple of times for having the most broken bones and everything like that, the most, I think, injuries and everything. That's, you know, just imagine that, going through his whole life. Everything, I think he broke, like, everything in his body. I mean, and you can tell, like, you know, I mean, it's something where, I guess, in some of his early films, the way he runs different afterwards. He runs a little, I think if the correct term is a little bow-legged, because he broke both of his ankles. So If you look earlier in his career, he runs a little bit different than he does when he's older. But you got to give the man credit because he keeps going. Because even in one of his other films, I think it was, I'm trying to think, Rumble in the Bronx, I think that was the one where he fell off the boat and he actually broke his leg. So they designed a special thing to put over his cast, and it was like a rubber thing, and it was made like looking like a sneaker, and they put it over his cast so it still could work. And it's like, man, this guy goes, you know, and goes and goes and goes. And then it's like the one where that was a really bad fall, I think it was Honor of the Gods, and Jackie landed on his head. And he said, he was trying to get up, and I guess blood had came out of his ears. And it was like they told him, oh, Jackie, don't get up. So, you know, when he has, I guess now he has like, I don't know if he has like a hole in his head or something like that, and he teases people, go, look, I got a hole in my head. Like there's something that, you know, he teases people because of from the injury. And I'm trying to see if it says anything, going back to his website. After a series of lukewarm receptions in the U.S., mostly due to miscasting, Jackie left the States and focused his attention on making movies in Hong Kong. It would be 10 years before he returned to make Rumble in the Bronx. The movie that introduced Jackie to American audience and secured him a place in the hearts in the box office. Rumble was followed by the Rush Hour and Shanghai Noon series, which put Jackie on the Hollywood A-list. Pulling this up, despite his Hollywood successes, Jackie became frustrated by the lack of varied roles for Asian actors and his own inability to control certain aspects of the filming in America. He continued to try, however, making The Tuxedo, The Medallion, and Around the World in 80s Days, none which was the blockbuster that Rush Hour Shanghai Noon had been. Jackie's lifelong devotion to fitness has served him well as he continues to do stunt work and action sequence. But you know something? I know that they don't say that his films aren't blockbusters, but if you really think about it, Jackie has like 54 million people on his page. Now, well, they take blockbusters, what? They make millions and millions of dollars. But Jackie Chan's fans, the Jackie Chan community, they love Jackie Chan. They love all his films. And whatever's not considered a blockbuster, you know, even though it maybe it didn't make like $100 million, people love the film. Now, if that's something that leaves right there where people watch his films like The Medallion or Around the World in 80 Days and other things, you know, I mean, that's going to mean something. Because when people love all his films, whether it was or it had made $100 million, whatever, you got to give Jackie a lot of credit because his fans love all his work. So that means something there. So I think reality, all of Jackie Chan's films are blockbusters because his fans love his work. Hey, what am I to say, you know? I can't even fathom what $1 million is, let alone like $100 million, but really, truth be told, people love Jackie's films. It's truth. He's loved around the world. So that's going to mean something right there. Anyway, Jackie's lifelong devotion to fitness has served him well as he continues to do stunt work and action sequence in his films. In recent years, Jackie's focus has shifted. He's trying new genres of film, fantasy, drama, romance, and spending more and more time on his charity work. And this is a lot of stuff that he does. I don't even know when this man sleeps. I honestly do not know when Jackie sleeps at all because he just goes from one thing to the next. When does this man sleep? I mean, does he have a clone of himself? He just, like, keeps going and going and going. It says, he takes his work as ambassador for UNICEF, UNAIDS, very seriously and spends all his spare time working tirelessly for children, the elderly, and those in need. He continues to make films in Hong Kong, including the blockbuster drama New Police Story in 2004. It's actually the new one, 2014. Okay. Jackie has been married to Lin Feng Zhao since 1982 and has a son, actor-singer J.C. Chen. To learn more about Jackie, you can read the biography, I Am Jackie Chan. Okay, anything else on his website? Let's see. If there's any news going on with Jackie, let's see. Pulling it up. Jackie stuff, more on his website. This is very sweet, very, very sweet. Jackie does a lot of charity work. And it's showing the Love, Peace, and Friendship Concert 2014. Ooh, what's this? It shows a picture of him holding a heart. also International Fan Club, which I'm actually part of the fan club. And I know I keep saying I'm going to take pictures of all the stuff that I have from the fan club. I've just been doing 50 million things, so I'm going to try to post all that stuff on my Facebook page when I have time, because even after this, I still have to work out even after this show. So I'm doing a half-hour show, and I'm getting guests on my show in the future. I'm just bringing up the website here. So let's see. On March 17, 2014, a press conference was held in Beijing announcing Jackie Chan's Love, Peace, and Friendship concert, which will be held on April 6, 2014, at the Beijing Workers' Gymnasium. So this is probably going to be on YouTube or something. It's gotta be telecast somewhere. I mean, it's probably going to be in Chinese, but it's an event, and it's happened April 6, 2014, at the Beijing Workers' Gymnasium. So there you go. There's a little bit of information about something doing, so maybe we all can actually watch it. Anyway, what's the next thing it says there? Arranged by Jackie's son, JC, as a celebrity, celebratory party for his father's birthday, many artists from around the globe have been invited to perform at the concert. Aw. And yeah, sweet. Oh, man, it's in Chinese. Oh, there's no translation. Darn it. I can't read that. I have to learn Chinese. I think I got to learn Chinese. I can't read that. It's beneath the love, peace, and friendship. Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. This ticket, it says, oh. Oh, my God. I wish I was in China. I'm looking. Oh, my gosh. Tickets to the concert, April 6th. Listen to me. I'm a grown woman getting excited over this. But it's, you know, tickets to the concert can be purchased online. It's in Chinese and English. Man, why can't I be in China? April 6th. So that's what's today. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's Sunday. Yeah. Maybe, oh, sweet. Because I have Sunday off, but, man, let's see. It says, overview. According to an exclusive by NBN, Jackie Chan turns 60 years old on April 7th, and his son, JC, will be throwing his birthday bash. Oh, man, I wish I could be there. I promise I wouldn't jump Jackie Chan or anything like that, but even I could have a cheat day. I'd eat cake. Can't really drink that much because I might fall down. Which be held in Beijing on April 6th. So that's this Sunday. Oh, I wish I had a TARDIS, like from Doctor Who. I wish I had a TARDIS or, like, Star Trek, so, like, I can say, hey, Scotty, beam me up, and then beam me down to Jackie Chan's birthday party. The birthday party will be in the form of a charity concert, 2014 Peace and Love and Friendship. Actress Kim Hee-sung, idol group EXO, and Super Junior. Oh, my God, Super Junior. Siwon were invited to Jackie Chan's benefit concert in celebration of his 60th birthday. According to the Jackie Chan Group Korea, on March 5th, Kim Hee-sung, the 12 members of EXO, and Super Junior, Siwon, have confirmed their attendance to Jackie Chan's 2014 Peace and Love concert to be held at the Beijing National Stadium on April 6th. Let's see what it says underneath that. It says, last year, Jackie Chan had a benefit concert to aid the victims of Xiong earthquake. Many of his Chinese celebrities' friends were invited to, along with Big Bang's G-Dragon. Big Bang, yeah. Man, see, this is why, you know something? I hope I do get on a regular radio show because, you know, the music that I could play, I'd be playing all the K-pop and everything like that, Jackie Chan's music. So if I ever do get on a regular radio show, man, oh, man, you should see the stuff that I would bring. I'd be playing Jackie Chan's music and all the stuff over there, all the really cool stuff. Wow, that's just so cool. Tickets available now. Man, let's see. I so wish I could be there this Sunday. Man. Oh, it's a bummer. Bummer. Let's go. Okay, how do I get back to the website here? Let's see. Go back an arrow. Let's see. Let's see, I'm going back here with Jackie Chan. Anyway, yeah, that's everything about Jackie there. And, I got to, like, sing happy birthday to Jackie Chan. Okay. Oh, my dear gosh. Singing happy birthday. Let's see. I'm just trying to bring up his website here. So, give me one moment, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just looking up stuff. Hold on for a second. I'm just typing here. Okay. Okay. All right, let's see. I'm going to actually sing happy birthday. I just sent an email over here. So I'm going to try to sing happy birthday. Hope it doesn't break any anything. Hope it don't break any windows. Well, anyway, I'm going to sing. Ready? One, two, three. Happy birthday to you. I told you I can't sing. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jackie. Happy birthday to you. So, yeah, I'm trying to find some more stuff on Jackie, see if there's anything new. You know me. I know I haven't talked much about Jackie much on my page. I know a lot of people are like, man, you talk about Jackie a lot, because, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm doing myself. The thing is, if anybody has an idol, like myself, I've always loved Jackie Chan, it's good to have idols, you know. And, you know, I know people, I understand, believe me, I understand, when you want to meet, you know, when you want to meet your idol, I get that and stuff, and people say, I want to be like, you know, so-and-so. Just remember, and Jackie would say this himself too. He would say, you know, like he tells people, don't try to be like Jackie Chan, try to be yourself. So I want to be myself and do things in my own way. The thing is, the very positive thing, my dream has always been wanting to work with Jackie Chan. The thing that I'm thinking of, because Jackie's getting older, not that I have to prove anything, and I'll explain why I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Jackie's getting older, and I don't like to use the term old. And Jackie wants to step away a little bit from doing stunts and doing more drama. And I hope people can understand and appreciate why he's doing this. And I will always have the deepest respect for Jackie Chan. The thing is, he's said that as he gets up in the morning, he gets aches and pains. But he's done a lifetime of doing stunts. He says that, you know, if, you know, he can't climb as fast as three stories like he used to, but he says he can do one story. And that's still an amazing feat. I mean, how many of us can climb up a story building? even just one. You know, it's like even to think about that. So the other thing, too, is what I'm thinking of, and I'll explain why once again I'm going to say this. The thing is, I don't think I'm going to bother Jackie and say I want to work with Jackie, because the reason why, and I mean, I always have that dream of wanting to work with Jackie Chan. The thing is, the world needs Jackie Chan more than me. It really, he does a lot of charity work and stuff, and I just, you know, I took a step back and I really thought of this. Jackie, the world needs Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan does more charity work, and for me to say, you know, I'm not some sort of black belt or anything like that. I mean, there's so much more people more advanced and much more talented than me. And so I took a step back and I thought of, you know, since I know a lot about Jackie, he spends a lot of free time doing charity work. So I think it's like Beth said, Jackie spends more of his free time doing the charity work than for me to do my dream. And it's something where, you know, I totally understand Jackie, and in my life, you know, I'm not, if Jackie Chan ever retires before I ever get a chance to work with him, I'm not going to be someone that's going to be mad. The reason why, Jackie deserves respect. And this is something, the reason why, you know, talking about this with with what my decision is, because having a dream and work with Jackie has given me so much. It's given me strength. When I've had hard times in my life, Jackie Chan's films inspired me since I was a little girl. And having that dream and work with Jackie has led me to do things I never thought I was going to do, and writing my own type of film and such, and being inspired by Jackie, where, you know, I can't do what Jackie does, but he's inspired me. And I know, be careful, please, anyone say, you know, I will promise to be careful. I actually want to jump out of a helicopter and jump out of a building in my own film. I can't be like Jackie Chan, but those are things, you know, I've seen Jackie do, and I want to do myself. And it's something that I'm taking upon myself. It has nothing to do with Jackie personally. It's just stuff that I want to do. So never blame anything about with Jackie, you know, stuff that I want to do. He's just inspired me. And I said, you know what? Who says I can't do stuff that I want to do? Okay, once again, I can never do what Jackie Chan does. But once again, going back, I hope everyone understands that, you know, why I just really think that stepping away and not bothering Jackie Chan and keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to become successful in my own way. You know, and it's really great that Jackie, you know, he's changing a little bit and he wants to do more dramas and stuff, and he might even, maybe he'll take direction and do directing and stuff. So, you know, I'm just happy to even watch his films. And I'll be happy if I can see another 10 or 15 years more of his work. I think that's what really, really makes me happy, because he's such an inspiration, not just to me, but he's an inspiration to so many people around this world. And if not having inspiration, I wouldn't, like, you know what I'm saying, I wouldn't have this freedom, I wouldn't be this free spirit if it wasn't for Jackie, because there's many times in my life with his films, you know, I felt sad, and I put on his films, and I'm in this, you know, all my problems are put aside. And his films always made me laugh. But the thing is, Jackie's always gotten hurt in his films. And it's kind of like we all laugh because we see the blooper reels at the end, at the very, very end. So it's something that, you know, we have to take into some consideration. And I'm just like thinking, I just want to play one song. And I will be right back. So if anybody wants to call in after the song, it's 347-989-1473. And this is Tony J, If I Could Fly, and I'll be right back.
If I could fly, if I could fly, I'd spread my wings out and take off in the sky. Money, that's all I know. I'm blowing out, girl, cause I'm so fly. I know, oh, you don't know no one like me. It might be that I'm so, oh, close to the ground and I'm down here dealing with real life. It make me wanna take you by the hand like now we taking off, just as quick as your clothes, I'll take you higher. Baby, just so you know, I'm a rider. And if I'm on the road, you know I'm thinking about you till I fly back home. I'm telling you I wanna be the kind of guy that I always wanna be there for you. Go through the stormiest weather just so we can be together.
If I could fly, if I could fly, I'd spread my wings out and take off in the sky.
If you wanna see a star, I could be a Superman in the air, I could rescue you. I could let you hold my hand, I will let you go almost anywhere if you wanna go far. Cloud nine, only for the night, you look good and I wanna make you mine. But about time, I gotta catch a flight, I hate to say it, baby girl, but your time's up, time's up. I guess you out of luck, girl. I'll be back and we can travel the world. Baby, you ain't gotta worry about a thing. I could put you under my wings.
If I could fly, if I could fly, I'd spread my wings out and take off in the sky. If I could fly, if I could fly, I'd soar through these clouds watching planes go by. And as I go by, I'll be looking down on you, you'll be looking up at me. Soon you'll
take off in the sky. If I could fly, if I could fly, I'd soar through these clouds watching planes go by. And as I go by,
I'm trying to find my book. I'm running around holding something to my ear. And, you know, once again, I do apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I've been having, you know, they're trying to fix some stuff for me for the show. And I'm going to have some great guests on the show. Once again, I'll let everyone know there's two people that I kind of am confirming to be future guests. Is one of my new friends. I've known him for a little while now. Is Ron Lester, who's actually from the film Varsity Blues, who starred with his film brother, Paul Walker. And Paul Walker had passed away. He was known from the series Fast and the Furious. And what Ron Lester is going to be doing, he's actually making a film in honor of Paul Walker, and it's called Racing Legacy. So I'm going to have him on the show. And once again, well, it's kind of related to Jackie Tin a little bit here. My other guest that I got back in touch with is Johnny Crane, who actually fought Jet Li in a film, and he actually did a couple of parts when he fought Jet Li. And he actually interviewed Jackie Chan himself. So I will have Johnny Crane back on my show again. And he's been a stuntman in the business for a while. He's not a man of many words, but he does a lot of fight stuff. And he was also a comedian too. And I'll probably have some other people back on, a lot of my ninja friends. I'm looking forward to my ninja pal, Stephen Lambert. I'm pretty sure he's going to be back on my show. And Stephen, what a sweetheart. I've got to tell you, this man is so cool. And the funny thing is, like with Jackie, you know, like I said, growing up, you don't know who the people were because you didn't have all this technology. And Stephen Lambert, he was in all these ninja films that I watched. And the funny thing, he's a stuntman too. And he's just as crazy, but he's so well-balanced and very humble. And the guy, he did stunts, one stunt which was really crazy, and he was telling me about it. I had him on my show a couple times. And he was in the 1980s in Avengers, Rima Williams, Stephen Lambert was on top of the Statue of Liberty. And he really was up there doing the stunts. So he's done many different things. And now that I have the book, which both my books are actually falling apart. I don't know if they're going to be ever back in print, but I guess I must have loved. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow. I'm opening up a book. Oh, my gosh. I just pulled out of the book. What year was this? What year was this? I have two before I moved up here to Maine. Wow. I have tickets from the Down Easter, November 7th. Oh, my gosh. This was, I think, the last weekend. Oh, my gosh. I have these tickets of riding the Down Easter and the Charlie ticket on the very last weekend. I came up to stay up in Maine the last weekend before I actually moved up here. Oh, my gosh. That was kind of a little surprise here. I did not expect to see that. Is there anything else in this book here? This is the big one. I mean, my sister Charlie got me the other Jackie Chan book that I have, and that one's falling apart. Like I said, like the Velveteen Rabbit, when you really love something. I mean, this book itself, this to me, I mean... I hope I can find another hardcover book of it. And it's called I Am Jackie Chan. And the first one, which is the hardcover book, I actually found in Bucca Book, which was back in Boston, Massachusetts. And let's see. This is actually from Jackie Chan's book. I'm trying to open it up without it falling apart. Man, I love this book so much. Ay, 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 ay. I'm just like, man, I'm just trying to be so careful when I'm opening this up. Because it is like, it just looks like it's been through a war or something. Let's see. Okay. Sean Barry, I'm actually live on the air. I'm typing this. I'm on the air now. Okay. You know, I just, because I, you know when you put your status, oh gosh, I forgot to put this on his page, but I try to put it as simple as I can be. I write tons of things on my Facebook page, but 9 p.m. Standard Eastern Time, I say I'm going live on the air at 9 p.m. Standard Eastern Time. I don't know how much more money to say. Sean Barry, you got to tune in. You just click on the link. This is from, I think I get enough. Oh, good. Now that I think something's resolved, I can stay on the air an extra hour. Woo! That means I can read from the book here. This is actually, okay. Got to be careful with this book. Let's see. I want to. Okay, this is Jackie. I can believe, and this is his own words. It says, this is from I Am Jackie Chan, My Life in Action in Jackie Chan. So in the very first chapter, I don't know if you want to call it a chapter, but it says prologue, taking flight. And it says, I'm standing in the sky on the roof of a glass and steel office tower in Rotterdam, Holland. There are 21 floors of air between me and the concrete pavement below. I'm about to do what I do best. I'm about to jump. My stuntmen tell me that the fall is safe. Well, not safe, but maybe a little less than deadly. Of course, they only tried the jump from the 16th floor, and as I watched the test footage late last night, alone in our production offices, I realized that a 16th floor fall was too predictable, too possible. After all, my producer had been bragging to reporters that this will be the world's most dangerous stunt. And who would I be if I didn't live up to my press, not Jackie Chan? So against the advice of my director and my co-stars and the executives at the studio, I've decided to add 5 stories to the stunts. Told you crazy. That's 60 more feet of very thin air through which my 45-year-old body will be sliding. A few more seconds of excitement for the cameras. A few more screams from the audience starving for adrenaline. The formula is simple. The more terrified my friends and family are, the more satisfied my fans will be. And they mean everything to me. They come to the theaters hungry for a hero, for someone who can laugh at disaster, who can make funny faces at death, someone who can show them for real that only thing to fear is fear itself. But whoever said that never stood on roof in Rotterdam, never looked down over the edge of a skyscraper to see a foam target 250 feet below. From here, the mattress looks like a postage stamp. When I hold out both hands in front of my face, I can just about cover it entirely. Sorry to contradict you, Mr. Whoever, but the only things to fear are fear itself. And hitting the ground at 100 miles per hour with nothing but you in the emergency room but a few inches of foam rubber. I'm tired. That's what it said. No, I'm not saying I'm tired, but that's what it's in the book. My heart feels like a rock in my chest. My body screams at me about the abuse I've put it through over the last 4 decades. Parts of me I can't even pronounce are complaining about how badly I've treated them. And despite the mob of extras milling around the base of the building, hundreds of Dutch Marines and firefighters and police looking nervously up at the sky, I think to myself, is this jump really necessary? But the answer is there as soon as I ask the question. Yes, because this jump is special. It isn't just for the fans and the critics in the box office charge. This one is for the man who made it possible for me to stand here today, aching and shivering in the spotlight. This is for my master, Yi Jim Young. It's Y-U-J-I-M-Y-U-N, who was buried a week ago in Los Angeles. My trip from Holland to California for the funeral brought production to a grinding stop, costing Golden Harvest nearly $250,000. They knew better than tell me not to go, even if it for every wasted dollar is like a drop of spilled blood. I remember a frightened 7-year-old walking to the dark and musty halls of the China Drama Academy, holding his father's hand. Inside, he sees young boys and girls leaping and tumbling and screaming, paradise. How long do you want to stay here, Jackie? Forever, answered the boy, his eyes bright and wide. And he lets go of his father to clutch at the helm of his master's robe. For the next 10 years, I sweated and cried and bled under Master's hands. I cursed his name, when I went to sleep at night, and I swallowed my fear of hatred of him when I woke up in the morning. He asked for everything we had, and we gave it to him, under pain of injury or even death. When we came of age, we realized he'd given it all back with interest. It was Master Yu Jin Young who created Jackie Chan, and I do what I do today. I am what I am today because of him. And so the sleep is in his memory a final act of gratitude, a least gesture of defiance. Someone slaps me on the back, asks me if I'm ready. I nod, barely understanding. Another voice calls for quiet on the set. And suddenly, the only sound is the wind and the blood rushing in my ears and my heart beginning to pound like a giant drum. Camera, rolling, action. And I suck in my churning stomach, launch myself in the sky. I fly. I remember. And I mean, this is his book. I mean, this is, like, really real. And believe me, I know that this stuff is real because, you know, I know, like, a lot of stuff about Jackie. So I'm looking to see. I think there's probably maybe I should read a little bit about his, I'm looking on the next one. Once again, I do apologize. My book is falling apart here. And I'd like to, there's the one called The Young Master, Family Stories. I'm trying to see where it gets to you about his school days. And I think that's probably what I should read about Jackie Chan's schooling. Speaking of Jackie Chan, Kitty, come here. Come on, up, up, be good. I was watching my Brother Z's show earlier, and she was all nice watching Brother Z. She was all sweet. Now she's acting like a ninja running around. I'm like, come on, come here, I'll read it to you. Let's cuddle, come here. This title in the book is called School Days. And it says here, thinking back to those few years living on the peak, I'd have to say I was happy. I could have been content spending the rest of my life in the house, helping my mom fold clothes, watching my dad curse as he chopped vegetables, and explain the world as I saw it to my friend, the ambassador's daughter. Even the early morning workouts, as painful as they were, had a beautiful side. As the sun rose up over the mountain, it painted the city and the bay below in green, like a giant chest of treasure. Came as a nasty surprise when my father told me my days of innocence was coming to an end. School, I shouted, stomping my foot in rage. School was the place where the neighbor's kids wasted all the best part of the day. It meant dressing up in silly clothes, spending hours in the stifling classroom, and learning things that were of no use to anyone. I could learn everything I need to right here at home, probably more. Of course, like other arguments I had with my father, this one was a complete waste of time. And so a few days later, I found myself taking my first bus ride down the peak to the Nonhua Elementary Academy. On my way down, I ate my lunch, even though I just finished breakfast. And Jackie's always been hungry. I mean, you guys got to understand this. Jackie Chan's always, always hungry, and I kind of get why Jackie Chan's hungry. When you work out like 8 to 10 hours a day or and you're eating really healthy food, like just food itself, you are starving all the time. And, you know, being on this special way of eating, I'm hungry all the time. I can't stop eating, and it's like I'm starting to work out more. And I get this, when he's actually, he eats so much. He was always, even in the book, and him saying he was always hungry here. And when he came to America, when he first came to America, he heard the word diet. And Jackie was like, what's diet? What's diet? And people like, oh, that's when you don't eat. And Jackie almost hit the ground. He was like, what do you mean you don't eat? I'm always hungry. So I understand exactly what he means by that. It was very good school, one of the best in the area, and I was extremely lucky to have a chance to go there. The teachers were patient, the classrooms were spacious and brightly lit, and the students were all from well-bred families. I hated it from the instant I walked through the schoolyard gates. Jackie, I don't blame you. I didn't like school either, so Jackie, I kind of didn't like school either. Every minute I spent there was torture, except for lunch hour and occasionally gym. Trapped in a classroom with nothing to do, puzzle at the words in my text, or listen to the drowning voice of the teacher, I almost missed the aches and pains of my father's morning regimen. A sore body was better than a numb brain any day. The boredom forced me to find ways of amusing myself. I make faces at other students or thump rhythms on the desk with my palms or fall out of my chair by accident over and over again. After a few nosy but enjoyable disruptions, the teacher would usually drag me out into the hall. Chin, Kong Sing, you will never amount to anything, she'd tell me. Her face stretched out in anger. It would be all I could do to avoid breaking into laughter. It really was a funny expression. In those days, teachers could be creative with their punishment. Usually I'd have to stand for the rest of the period holding a desk over my head. Putting a desk over his head. Oh, my gosh, and he was a kid. And sometimes I have to wear a sign around my neck explaining the nature of my crime. Like, this is a noisy, ill-behaved boy. Or, this boy lost all his books. Or, this boy not done his homework. Sometimes it would just say in a couple of characters, useless. Aw. Let's just say here, to be honest, I couldn't read very well back then, so I'd have to take my teacher's word as to what they said. Standing out in the hall with people, at least. And if no one was looking, I'd gently put the desk down, lean against the wall, and catch a few winks. Learning how to sleep standing up was probably the most useful thing school ever taught me. Actually, now I regret not having paid more attention in school. You can't ever go back again, and I'll never know the pleasures of classics or higher mathematics or the great lessons of history. Once in a while, I wonder what would have happened if I'd taken the other path, the one that led to high school and college and respect or career in business, or maybe law or medicine. I could have been the world's most famous doctor instead of the world's most famous patient. Oh, yeah, that's true. He did break everything in his body there, so, yeah. I could see him that, okay, I was like, I wonder how much more is, okay, this is just a couple more pages. I never get the hang of being a student. Each morning before I left, my mother gave me money for the bus ride home, not wanting me to take the long hike up the peak in the evening. Well, I usually use the money to buy snacks. I told you Jackie Chan was always hungry, and they rely on the kindness of strangers to get a ride home. It's surprising me how many strangers are willing to pick up a small, ragged-looking Chinese boy walking up the side of a mountain. If I had the luck hitchhiking, I'd walk home, which would take hours. To save time, I usually take a shortcut the last couple hundred feet and scramble up the side of a cliff that would put me in our backyard. With any luck, I'd be able to sneak in the rear entrance and find my mom before my dad found me. When I wasn't lucky, which was often enough, at the top of the climb, the first thing I'd see was my father's work shoes looking up. I'd see the rest of my dad, his face rigid with rage. Without a word, he'd grab my arms and haul me up, marching me into the house, down the hall, into the garbage room, not even let me change out of my school clothes first. That wasn't the only obstacle I have to get past my daily trip back home. As I dragged myself up the cliff, sweaty and annoyed, I'd hear my braying laughter, hi-ya, hi-hi, like a pack of hyenas. Hey, guys, look, there are monkeys on this mountain. The neighbor's bullies who tormented my friend, the ambassador's daughters, were rich enough to have drivers take them up and down the mountains. So by the time I got back at home, they'd already be there waiting for me. What's the matter, boy? Lose your bus money? Or are you too poor for the bus? Hey, what do you expect? His parents are just servants anyway. I'd be tired, my shirt tails hanging out, my face smudged, but a second later, I'd be making the biggest of the bullies eat a dirt sandwich. Those fights weren't like in the movies. This isn't anything pretty or graceful but a fight between two young kids. Everything is arms, legs, poked eyes, and ripped clothing, and sharp gravel stuck in awkward places. Even the winner ended up looking like an avalanche survivor, and it wasn't always the winner. I remember one fight when the swarthy little brat I was pounding on grabbed me by the legs and pulled me off balance. I went down, and he went down on top of me. My body hit the hard ground. My head hit an even harder rock. Everything went dark. Jeez. The boy I was fighting was one of the son of another ambassador. I don't remember which country, and as soon as he saw me stiff and motionless on the ground, he ran to find his father. The other kids scattered. When his dad came over, he turned white with horror. If I died, it'd surely be a scandal. There was an international incident in the making. Those days, maybe I would have sued them, but at the time, I couldn't do anything. Anyway, I woke up in my bed in the dark, a huge bump on my head, feeling nauseated. The little flashes of light, little tiny comets seemed to shoot through my blackness, and my entire skull hurt. I was floating in the bath of pain. The door opened, and my father walked in. Ah, Paul, he said, this is from your friend. I lifted my head with effort and saw a parcel in his arms, a large, fancy box of chocolates. I think they were French even. Dad brought it over and set it down next to it and quietly left to go cook dinner. Even though I was sick to my stomach, I was also hungry. Well, I was always hungry. See, I told you, it even says in his book, Jackie Chan's always hungry. The box of chocolates, the entire box, didn't even last an hour. Oh, my gosh. I probably would have done the same thing. I crawled back in bed trying hard not to throw up. After all, they were French chocolates, and I didn't want to waste them. Getting hit in the head had turned into the best thing that had happened to me in a long time. They didn't last. When my father came back, smelling of scallions and sesame oil, he saw the crumbled up tissue paper scattered around the bed and the sweet smell of chocolate around my mouth and exploded. You ate the whole box, he shouted. Oh, I said, tongue rising in my throat. Without another word, he pulled me out of bed and gave me a sound spanking. If I were well enough to eat 4 dozen milk chocolates, some with cherry liquor scents, I was well enough to take my medicine. If it wasn't one thing, it was another. I never did my homework. I'd tear my good clothes in fights or in scrambles up my special shortcut. I throw my books and school bag off the peak. Jackie, I'm giving no thought to the fact that my parents would only have to buy me new ones. Each time I'd face the music, lecturing, spankings, a night in the trash room with a shrug and a smirk. I end up being told I have to repeat the first year of primary school. And even if I wasn't learning anything, my parents were there. They were beginning to realize that their son was not the scholarly type. My parents pulled me out of school, and I went back to my old routine of following my mom around and getting under my dad's skin. And that was the end of my academic career. I guess I thought I was pretty smart getting out of school in that way and watched the rich kids driving down the mountain to a fresh day of hell. Laughing at myself as I look forward to another warm afternoon on my own. The last thought would be on me. I imagine the conversation is having happened something like this. My mother and father ran into another in the corridor that dominated our world. Lily, we have to talk about Apollo. My mother, afraid of what's coming next, remained silent but reluctantly nodded. The boy is out of control, my father said. He has no direction, no self-respect. He's a good boy, she said in my defense, sounding tentative. He needs to learn how to be a man. Then they talked about the future and about the painful subject of money. The post with the French ambassador had been a lifesaver, but it was not allowing him to save anything. My father's cooking, my mother's housekeeping had impressed the ambassador's friends to no end. Other job offers had come. Some of them were too good to ignore. One of them was too good to pass up, a job as a head cook for the American Embassy in Australia. Not only would the job pay more money, it would also give us the chance to get Australian residency, maybe even a chance someday to move to the United States. Even back then, there was uncertainty about the mainland, and my father had learned from personal experience that uncertainty lay dangers. But taking the job in Australia would mean leaving the family behind, at least for the time being. And while my mom was a strong woman, I was too big now to be put in a wash basin to left to splash around. Finally, Dad, a guy's guide to the bone, but back to the traditional source of advice for men all over the world, his drinking buddies. They'd helped him decide to keep me, even lending my dad money to pay for my mom's operation. Now they suggested a way of getting rid of me for my own good. It's a hard life, but a good one. He'll get some discipline. Maybe we'll become a star. And they all shed a hearty laugh, but the decision was made. My dad would take me to a place that would become my home for the next decade of my life, Yu Jin Young's China Drama Academy. And let's see, what's another chapter that I want to read from this book? Let's see. Day at the Opera. Okay. This is after, you know, his mother and father had left him. Oh, I wonder if this is, okay. I want to go see where he's actually, this is the part where it says his first goodbye, when his mother and father actually had to leave him at the academy. And it says, shortly after the document was signed, my parents called me away from the small group of other students with whom I've been playing. Come with us to say goodbye, Kapow, my mother said. I didn't understand what she meant. Can we say goodbye right there? But the tone of voice stopped me from complaining. I walked with her and my father out of the academy, waving goodbye to the students and my new master and telling them I'd be back soon. We wanted to return to the house on the peak. My father busied himself with small matters while my mother disappeared into our bedroom. I took the opportunity to say goodbye to the ambassador's wife and told her I'd be back to visit. She smiled and patted me on the head and wished me good fortune, promised me to give her children a hug for me. Soon I heard my parents calling and left the house again for the lower city. My father was carrying a large bag full of clothes and personal belongings and holding tightly onto my mother's shoulders. How long will you be away, Dad? I asked him, and we took the winding bus ride down the peak. He stared out the window of the bus, his face his usually solemn mask. How, Paul, is possible that I will not see you for a very long time, he said. I was too young to really understand the passing of time. Did he mean weeks, months, years? My mother took my hands in hers. Your father is going to work in Australia across the ocean, so someday we'll be able to give you all the things you like. That I understood. It seemed like a pretty fair exchange. My father going to exchange for nicer things. We took the bus all the way down to the bay and walked down the harbor past the ferry dock. I docked at the sleek and enormous ships, the tall stacks of crated goods bound for 100 countries, and the giant cranes being used to load and unload cargo. Ahoy, Chan! Shouted a gruff, strangely accented voice. My father waved at the approaching figure, a big, fat foreigner with a thick, blonde mustache. This is the man who's arranging for your father's travel, my mother whispered. Dad is riding on one of those big boats. Your father's going to take the boats over there. The boat, rocking gently in the stiff breeze, was smaller than the giant cargo ship, but larger by far than the Star Ferry, the only boat I've ever been on. I was suddenly overcome by envy. I want to go on the boat, too, I complained. Perhaps someday when you're older, our pal, my mother said. Now be good. You must draw a picture of your father in your head so you remember him until the next time you see him. I squeezed my eyes shut and thought about my dad, tall, strong, and tough. Shaking a knife at me in mock anger as I stole a scrap of food from his kitchen, slumped in exhaustion at the end of the day, his apron stained and his hands rough from scrubbing away the smells of a day's meal. Silhouetted against the pink morning sky, his arms moving fluidly through a series of kung fu exercises. I thought about the day we first visited the academy and the steaming hot sweet buns we shared together. When I opened my eyes, I was surprised to find that they were damp. My father had finished his conversation with the foreigner and was giving my mother a rough embrace as he whispered into her ear. She nodded into his shoulder and whispered back. Then, releasing her, he came to me and squatted down on his knee. Kong Sang, he said, calling me by my given name, you are a big boy now, big enough to take care of yourself. I know you'll make us proud. I nodded dumbly. I said, the next time I see you, you have grown into a young man. I won't have the chance to hear your father's advice again, so I want you to promise me three things, he said. First, you must never ever join a gang. Second, you must never take drugs. And third, you must never become a gambler. So then I didn't know what any of these things were. Their promise was an easy one to make. No matter what you become, no matter if life treats you well or poorly, you must keep your word on these three things, he said. Then I would know that you're following the right path and giving your family and your ancestors no reasons to be ashamed. And with that, he gave me one last quick hug and stood. The big foreigner came, called his name again, and my father turned and walked up the ship's gangplank. Two sails cast off the boat's ropes at the gangplank was raised. The boat drifted away from the dock toward my father's fresh side in a strange land. We waved at the ship as the water began to churn white behind it. Remember what I said, Alpal, my father shouted, just before he slipped out of earshot. And then it was time for me and my mother to make our trip across the water back to the academy and my own new life. It was late by the time we arrived, and the lengthening shadows gave a creepy feel to the deserted back streets. Though some trick of the light, the building that housed the academy suddenly looked forbidding, even frightening, more like a prison than a home. I swallowed hard, telling myself that I was headed for fun and freedom, and that I really wouldn't miss my mom and dad that much. The master welcomed us back and reassured my mother that all would be fine. She promised that she would visit me regularly and fussed over me, using the corner of her sleeve to wipe at a smear of dirt on my face. The other students giggled at the sight, bringing a hot flush of embarrassment to my cheeks. Don't worry about me, Mom, I said impatiently. Finally, she let me go and was escorted to the door of my master. She turned to look back at me, but I was already deep in conversation with the other kids. I don't even remember the last thing she said to me before she left, but as soon as Master returned from showing my mother out, it was as if something in the air had changed. The students quietly went back to their chores or private practice. The Master took my hand and showed me around the academy, pointing out things I might have overlooked. The ancestral shrine, the kitchen, the large outdoor shower area. We sat at the long table and Master smoked cigarettes while asking me about my family and my old home on the peak. We talked for hours until late in the night. The master, watching a yawn split my face, told me it was time to go to bed. He called out to the other students who filed into the main hall carrying neatly folded blankets, then wished me a good night. He patted me on the head and left the hall for quarters elsewhere in the academy. Hanging up on the table, I watched the kids talking quietly amongst themselves, arrange their blankets around the edge of the practice room. We sleep on the ground? I asked one of the boys I played with early in the day. Ignore me if walked down on his stomach, pulling his old blanket around his body. I felt a thump cloth against my back and turned around. It was my nemesis, Yung Lung. He threw a roll of fabric at me, a blanket at moth-eaten worn as the others, and his face wore its customary scowl. Quit screwing around, new boy. Lights out in 10 minutes, unless you ask to take you for the floor. This is a, once again, I'm trying to be careful of my book here. Is laid down in a corner and spread the blanket out, bending my arm into a pillow for my head. Soon even Yung Lung had ready himself for sleep, and the oldest of the students, quiet young man Yung Ting, whose official title was Big Brother, shouted, lights out, and the room went dark. As hard as the wooden floor was, beat the concrete of the rubbish floor. I rolled onto my side and quickly fell asleep. So I guess that was the first night he actually, you know, spent at the Drama Academy. So let's see the next. Okay. Let's see. Next chapter to read. I'm just looking over here. Okay. I think this is Big Brother. And the sweet thing is, I got to tell you something really, really, really special in my own life. And, you know, like I said, I must very much look up to Jackie Chan. And it's just like, it's not the same exact things, but I pray, you know, Jackie Chan has a couple of big brothers. His brother, Sammo Hung, he is actually one of his big brothers. And I actually prayed one time many years ago. I was like, I wish I had a big brother like Jackie Chan has Sammo. And a big brother did come into my life, and I bring him up on the time from here to here on my show. His name is Ahura. Everyone calls him Z. So, yeah, I have a big brother like Jackie Chan does. His name is Z, you know, and I actually, yeah, I got to train a year in Tai Chi with him. So, you know, Jackie, it just seems so weird, even though it's like, you know, he was a kid. I guess you can say I'm like, I'm a big little kid. And he trained with his brother and his brothers at this Martial Arts Drama Academy. And they got to train with my big brother. So kind of a little bit same here. Okay, let's see how much time I got left. I got to be careful my time. Wow, time goes by fire when you're reading from a book. Fast, like really fast. Let's see. I guess he did get picked on a lot in there. Let's see. What else can I read from the book? This book is pretty big. This one's a little bit of a short chapter. It says, "My brother, my enemy." The next day, I opened my eyes to find that all of the other students had already awakened. Master and biggest brother stood at the front of the room, leading the boys and girls through a grueling set of warm-up exercises. Kicking aside my blanket, I stretched and wandered through the ranks of sweating students, whistling to myself and laughing at the expression of exertion. Some of them shot dirty glances at me, but I didn't care. No one was telling me what to do. No one was yelling at me, and for the first time in my life, I was completely free to do whatever I wanted. Breakfast had already been served, eaten, and cleared, so I wandered into the kitchen looking for something to munch on. It was empty, and all the food locked away in the pantry. That was too bad. I was dying of hunger. I told you, Jackie's always, always hungry. Ever since he was a kid, he's always, always hungry. Then I remember that my mother had, on the walk over from the ferry terminal, brought me a bag of snacks and sweets. It was still sitting in the entry room. Rummaging quickly through the bag, I found some oranges and a handful of plum candy. I ran back to the practice hall and sat down in one corner, watching the students work while peeling an orange and stuffing segments into my mouth. After an hour, the master called a short break, and the students broke into small groups to talk and catch their wind. I finished one of the oranges and set the other aside for later and was sucking intently on a piece of the dried plum candy when a harsh voice broke my concentration. "Hey, new boy, where'd you get the food?" It was Yung Lung. His white shirt damp with perspiration and his face mean. Behind him was his constant sidekick and equally tough older kid named Yung Tai. "My mom gave it to me," I said, my mouth full of plum. "What'd you say?" said Yung Lung, eyes narrowing. Yung Tai stepped forward and stuck his hands in my face. "When you speak to an older student, you better call him Big Brother," he said. "Say it." "My mom gave it to me, Big Brother," I repeated, gritting my teeth. "Apologize to your big brother," Yung Tao said. "I'm sorry, big brother." Yung Lung's face lit up with a victorious smile. "Yung Tai, what's the penalty for disrespecting your elders?" Yung Tai thought for a second. "Penalty is no more snacks, Yung Lung." Yung Lung snatched away my second orange while Yung Tai pried over my hand to remove the remaining pieces of my plum candy. "Hey," I said, "you got a problem, new boy?" His mouth full of candy. The space between the two heads was suddenly filled by Master's stern and questioning face. "Is there a problem here?" he said in an edge in his voice. "No, master," shoving the orange into his pocket where it bulged like a horrible tumor and swallowed with difficulty, his eyes crossing and rattled out a weak "no, master" of his own. I grinned to myself. You see, every piece of dried plum candy had at its center. In his haste to get rid of evidence, Yuntao had just swallowed four or five pits at once. "Fung Sang," said master, his eyebrows quirked. "Everything fine, master," I chirped, folding my hands in my lap. Yung Lung glared at me and mouthed a curse in my direction. The two older boys went back to their practice, and I sat humming my mom's favorite song to myself, watching them happily until the call for lunch. Okay. That was a little bit, like it says, after school and when he met his brother, his two older brothers, who he did actually stay with in life, who worked in films with. Let's see. What other thing do I want to read here? I'm just flipping through the book now. Trying to find. Let's see. And the pictures in the book. I'm going past the pictures. Let's see. I'm trying to find something. Let me see. What else do I want to read? Growing up. That one says about growing up. Let's see. That one's a pretty. That's a pretty long one. Let's see what this one is. Oh, about Jackie Chan's first love. Okay. I think people would like to hear this. It's called Hot Struck. That was how it began, my first love. Oh, Jackie. I didn't tell any of the other guys what had happened, in part because it made for a lousy story, but mostly because I was scared that if I did, I'd jinx it and she'd disappear like a ghost, never to be found again. And I didn't want to face a bunch of questions that I couldn't answer, like what her last name was or when I'd see her again. The next day, Master told me to report to the movie studio where most of the other older students were working just in case they needed an extra body. I nearly ran out the door knowing that this was my chance. I took the long bus ride back to the performance hall where I met her the day before and found the organizer who brought us all together. Wearing my best innocent expression, I told him that my master wanted to express his compliments to Ho Chang's teacher and asked him the address to her school. It was so simple. The organizer was glad to assist a man of my master's stature and even gave me directions on how to get there. On the bus ride back to Kowloon, I planned out everything I'd say to her and thought about what I'd take my dream girl on off for a date. And that's when I started to get nervous. I'd never gone on a date before and had no idea what people did on their evenings out. What would Old Chang enjoy? Would she like to go drink tea or see a film? I really didn't know anything about her. Preoccupied, I nearly missed my stop and once again had a run out of the bus in a panic. I half hoped that somehow Faye would intervene and I'd bump into her on the sidewalk, just like the day before, but life is never that simple. Her school was just a few blocks from the bus stop, and it was very impressive compared to ours, newer and cleaner, at least from the outside with a shiny metal gate that had been freshly painted. The girls who learned opera here probably had never slept on a wooden floor in their life. My stomach felt hollow. Her friends didn't think much of me. What if she saw me and told me to go away, or worse, laughed at me until I was forced to leave in shame? I turned away from the gate, telling myself that there was still time to go to the field. But as I began to walk back towards the bus, I heard a voice in my head that sounded as stern and disapproving as my father. Was that all I was good for, lying on the ground and playing dead? And then the voice became a chorus. My father, my master, all of Shandong, shouting together that I was weak excuse for a man, afraid to stand up to the laughter of small girls, too afraid to even reach out for the most important thing in my life. I didn't care if she laughed at me. There was more shame in running away than in trying and failing. And my heart beating as strongly as any of my brave ancestors, I walked back to the gate and swung it open and stepped into the courtyard beyond. The stones paving the courtyard were even and neatly kept, without any weeds or cracks in sight. The door was bright as the gate had been, with the characters that made up the name of the school neatly carved into the sill above it and painted in gold. I straightened my clothes and knocked once, twice, and waited, my mind a complete blank. The door opened, revealing the face of an old woman with deep lines around her eyes. Yes, she asked, what can I do for you? I'm sorry, madam, but I have a message for one of your students. I stiffened my back and tried to look official. The woman blinked. I'm not a teacher here. I'm a housekeeper, she said. Madam is out on appointment. Which students do you need to see? I swallowed. The girl's name is Ah Chang. The gray head looked at me with faint suspicion. Miss Ah Chang is rehearsing right now. The message is a short one. I said, fighting back a wave of nausea. If you give it to me, I can pass it on, she said. Ma'am, I was told to give it to her in person, I said. My resolve was about to crumble. I wanted to run away, let the voices in my head argue with the old bag if they thought it was so important. The housekeeper sighed and motioned with her head. Wait right here. I'll find her, she said, but you really have to be quick. Success. I'd gotten past the first test. Like monkey from the old stories, tricking the guardian at the gates of heaven. After a few moments, the door opened again, and I faced her. Old Chang again, her mouth and eyes as round as O's, and the surprise of my unexpected appearance. She had apparently been in the middle of a full dress rehearsal because powdered white streaks of rose above her eyes. Her hair was pulled back with sparkling combs, and the plain outfit of yesterday's exhibition had been replaced with a flowing gown with long sleeves cut from a richly embroidered fabric. Hello, I managed to choke out. You look different. Even as I said the words, I cursed myself as a fool. Of all the things I imagined saying had sprung out of my head when I finally found myself facing her again. If I'm lucky, maybe she wouldn't call the police. I'm sorry, she said, covering her cheeks with her hands. I was rehearsing. We have a tour coming up, a trip to Thailand, and we have a lot of new things to practice. Don't be sorry. You look wonderful, I said. What was I saying? She laughed in her shy way. Did you really have a message for me, she asked. The housekeeper will be coming back. The message is, I said and stopped. I summoned all my determination. I could hear the distant encouragement of the voices. The message is that you have an appointment later. And who is the appointment with? With me, I said cockily. She laughed again in spite of herself. What time is the appointment? What time are you free? Old Chang leaned against the door, furrowing her brow. I go home at 10 o'clock, she said, but usually I just go to straight to sleep. Sneak out, I said. Oh, Jackie, you naughty boy. You got a girl to sneak out. I'll wait for you. You don't even know where to wait, she said. I will if you tell me, I responded, flashing my best smile, and she did. And then she closed the door. After giving me one last smile and wave, Monkey entered the gates of heaven, and the voices in my head was for sharing victory. Okay. This is, I spent the rest of my afternoon walking around Kowloon, just waiting. See, there's all these this thing. See, the thing with Jackie right here, and it says in the book in Kowloon, and the weird thing is where he is and stuff, it's just weird, all these things that I keep thinking of. I did dinner theater, and I used to do shows in this restaurant. It had comedy things, and the name of the place was Kowloon's. It's like, I'm just reading, I'm like, what? Yeah, it's just saying Kowloon here, and I'm like, that's just so strange, like all these little tiny weird coincidences that connect me in Jackie's life, but it says Kowloon here. And it was to say, just waiting until night. I managed to kill time walking slow circles around the neighborhood, watching the crowd and eating snacks. He's always eating. See? He's always eating. He even says in the book. I thought about going to the studio, but they wouldn't take me on it for a half day. And besides, I wanted everything to be perfect for my big date that night. No dirt, no sweat, no bruises or sprains. And then as I ate my third sweet bean bun, oh, my gosh, you guys don't even know. If you don't know what a bean bun is, oh, my God. Yeah, the buns, I get to eat them on Chinese New Year. Oh, my God. There's these white buns, and they have inside them, like, beans. It's all this sweet. It's not, like, mush for something, but, oh, the wonderful, wonderful steamed buns. Those are beautiful. They taste so good, and they're so yummy, and they're so sweet, and they're so good. Thought began nagging at me. As far as Master knew, I was at the studio all day doing the same boring stuff my brothers were doing. But tomorrow morning, he'd line us up after breakfast issue and ask for the pay we received the day before. With horror, I imagined the scene in my head. Where's your money, you know? He asked as I stood there empty-handed. Did you lose it or spend it foolishly? What excuses could I have? He gave me 75 smacks with his cane, one for every dollar I was missing, and even though he'd gotten graver and stiffer, he hadn't lost any of his strength. There was no help for it. I walked to the bank when my father had opened an account for me, asked the teller to withdraw Hong Kong $75. I'd give Master the money, never know the difference. But I thought to myself, girls were turning off to be expensive habit. At exactly 10 o'clock, I found myself standing outside of the gate to Old Chang's house on a very nice block in one of the weathered parts of Kowloon. The lights were out, and the windows shuttered closed. For a split second, I thought that I'd been tricked, and she was upstairs in her bed dreaming about what an idiot I was. And then the gate swung open, and her lovely face peeked out into the street. Hello, I said, putting one hand on the gate in what I hope was an appropriate casual pose. Jackie's so silly. You came, she said, smiling. I wasn't sure she'd be here. What else would I be? I said, smiling back. Come on. She stepped out into the street and I thought I'd never see anything so pretty in my life as Ho Chang at that moment, wearing a simple cotton dress, her head down and falling around her shoulders, lit only by the pale glow of the moon. We walked side by side down the street in silence. Then Ho Chang asked me about my school, and it was like a dam had broken open inside of me. I told her about the aches and pains of practice and knew she was listening and that she understood. I told her about master's hard discipline, the beatings and punishments, and she sighed in sympathy. I told her jokes and riddles and funny stories about my adventures with my brothers, and she laughed, and I felt like I could watch her laughing like that forever. We walked and walked until finally we found ourselves on the edge of Kowloon Park. Sitting there was there on a wooden bench, the moon high in the sky and a light breeze rustling the leaves on the trees around it. I somehow found the courage to take her hand, and she didn't pull away. I still remember how small and warm her hand was, how soft and graceful it was, so different from my rough, calloused fist. It was like our hands were from two different worlds. Hers were the hands of wealthy, soft, and delicate. Mine were practical, purposeful. They were tools or weapons. We sat there together for hours, talking a little bit, mostly just looking at the moon and each other. Then she said, "Yung Mao, I have to go. It's almost midnight." And the spell was broken. I didn't argue. It was already much more than I could have hoped for. A poor ragged guy like me and a rich, pretty girl like her, I pulled her up off the seat and we began to walk back to our home. "It was nice to see you," she said as we approached her block. I nodded, squeezing her hand. We stood in front of her gate. That night, at its darkest hour, I wondered if I should kiss her. Somehow, it didn't seem right like if I did. It would break some secret unspoken rule and she'd disapprove forever. And so I just watched in silence as she waved goodbye and crossed into her courtyard. And then she peeked her head out again, knowing I hadn't yet turned to leave. "Will you come visiting me again, Yung Mao?" she asked, her cheeks pink and her eyes looking modestly away. She liked me. It broke out again in my grin and my heart leaping. "How could you keep me away?" I said. And before she could answer, I blew her a kiss and ran into the night, hearing her giggles trail off behind me in the warm, humid air. From that point on, I went to visit her nearly every day of the week, ditching work, inventing excuses, and drawing dollar after dollar from my dwindling bank account to give to master. Every day, I saw her cost me $10, which was a big amount. You could eat for a week on that, but what did I care? The money was buying me love. Of course, I had to tell my brothers that I had a girlfriend, so that they would cover me if master got suspicion. After all, they knew I wasn't going into the studio to work, but if I wanted to waste my money the way, who would they to criticize? The only bad part was hearing the awful jokes, Chang, and what we would probably be doing out there in the park alone every night. It wasn't like that, but they never understood. I let them have their fun and resolved never to let them meet her if I could possibly help it. Then about 6 months after I started seeing her, master told me he was sending me on another exhibition. This one wouldn't take place in Hong Kong at all. It would be in Southeast Asia, in Singapore, thousands of miles away. I broke the news to Ho Chang, expecting her to be sad, but she just laughed. "Don't be silly. It's only a few weeks," she said. "Besides, don't you remember? I'll be on tour in Thailand. At the same time, we'll be practically next door to each other." So after half a year of being together, we'd be apart. For the very first time, I made a promise not to forget me. She promised me the same. I knew in my heart that promises like that weren't necessarily for me. It didn't matter how long or far away, she would always be in my dreams. Aw, Jackie, Let's see. I'm trying to see. Okay. This part is called Heart Sick. So this is the, you know, the next chapter right after that. Let's see. I'm just trying to fix it so that the pages are not going to fall apart. Well, once again, I do apologize. This book, I guess I love this book so much that it's actually it's falling apart, ladies and gentlemen. I do apologize, so I'm trying to be careful turning the pages here. Okay, this one's called Hot Sick. On the trip to Singapore, I felt lonely for the first time in a long while. Living in the crowded school, I was hardly ever on my own, so going on trips by myself was actually sort of a luxury. Now that I had Ho Chang and now that we were apart, every moment felt empty. There was always something missing. And so there I was, far away from my home, counting down the days. The host of the exhibitions had put me up in a house, a much nicer place than the school, with a real bed and even an indoor bathroom. Other than at meals, they pretty much ignored me. I didn't want to wander the city on my own. I worked out during the daytime, hoping that good, honest sweat would help me forget about Ong Cheng. Just for a little while, at night I explored the City of Lions. I thought I could make it through the 2 weeks away without going crazy, and I almost did. The night right before I left Singapore, I went walking by myself as usual, staring at buildings and people listening to the shouts of street hawkers selling unusual treats in an unfamiliar tongue. It was my last chance to see the city, and so I walked farther than I've gone in a night all the nights before, until I found myself in a deserted street miles away from my host home. In my eagerness to get away from my own thoughts, I'd forgotten about the time. It would take me hours to get back. I'd be lucky to make it before dawn. That's when the rain began. Not a gentle spray, but a sudden tearing downpour that quickly built into full-scale monsoon. Sheets of water fell from the sky, and the wind whipped at the cloth canopies and brightly painted signs. I ran through the storm, my head down, instantly soaked, knowing that I'd never make it back on foot. Then I saw an old rustling bicycle abandoned on a street corner by its owner and straddled it in the half shelter of the doorway. The wind would make riding difficult, but I'd get back faster than walking. I pushed down the street and began to pump with all my might, head first into the gale, standing on the pedals and leaning forward on downhill strokes. I wanted to be with Ong Cheng forever, but giving away 10 years of my new life, I could spend with what was left with her. I'd give up anything. In my frenzied brain, it seemed to me that somehow, if I rolled up the storm, if I made it home in one piece, my wish would come true. I pedaled harder, like I was racing against my own bad luck. And then in the white brightness of a lightning flash, I saw a figure in a balcony above me. And somehow, I knew it was her. That I'd won the race, that she was mine forever. I threw the old bicycle aside, splashed through the dirty water of the street, and I leaped up to grab the side of the balcony, climbing up and over despite the slickness of the wet ironwork. It was a woman's wet blouse, left twisting and forgotten on a drying pole, that I'd mistaken for her from Ong Cheng. I laughed at myself, and it was a sign of how stupid I was. How could she be here in Singapore? Why would she be singing out in the rain? She was hundreds of miles away, being showered with praise in the afternoon of Richard Myers. Stupid me. She was sweet and beautiful. She lived in a nice house, and she was one of the most famous actors in the Charles Opera Circle. Me? I was dumb, poor, dumb stuntman, a big-nosed, ugly kid with no future. Huddling under the pitiful shelter of the balcony canopy, I put my head down on my knees and dropped off to sleep. The wetness of my cheeks could have been rain or something else. Let's see. He says underneath here, I apologize. I didn't intend to go so far, of course, but Ong Cheng was probably the most wonderful thing to happen to me up to that point. And just thinking about her still makes me a little happy and a little sad. Many years later, Ong Cheng retired from singing in the Beijing Opera and opened a small boutique in Hong Kong. Every so often, I would send one of my assistants over to check on the store to make sure things were going okay, and to buy expensive items of clothing, which would later donate to charity. I didn't want her to know that I was keeping an eye on her. She would never have let me support her like that, even as a friend. So everything had to be done in complete secrecy. Recently, she decided to move from Hong Kong and announced to her customers that she was closing the store. I gave all my female staff members money and told them to go over to the boutique, and they ended up buying everything that Ong Cheng had. Ong Cheng was happy that she had so many loyal customers, and my staff members were happy to get some nice things for free. You know, she never got married, and she didn't even have a boyfriend. It makes me wonder sometimes. But I said it before, history is history, the past is past, and that's where it belongs, is our happy memories. I'm sure she agrees with me that's the kind of person she is. And that was the end of that chapter. Because I'm trying to find something, because we all know Jackie, you know, as the stunt guy he is. So this is to make him, you know, seem just like the rest of us. You know, that's why I'm reading all these different things about Jackie. Because, you know, he, you know, the exciting stuff, you know, it's really great. But to find out what makes him part of being human, it's good to hear these things. And this is his own book. Like it says, he's falling apart, so bear with me. And I get maybe about 15 minutes left, I think. And I want to try to find out. Let's see. I think this is the one where it almost killed him. Let's see. I was trying to find the thing where, I don't know if where he actually had a hole in his head from the, I think it was Armor of the Gods, but let's see. And it shows, it actually shows pictures and this one where he has no shirt on. Jackie, you half naked. Like there's so many pictures in the book that I love these pictures. I think I gotta try to find a hardcover if I can get a new new one of these books. Like I said, my books are falling apart. I'm looking. Oh, I should check the energy on my cell phone and make sure it's not dying. Okay. I guess my cell phone is not dying. That's a good thing, too. I don't want to be full. Let's see. What else can I read in here? Scrolling through here. I was trying to see if it said something about Jackie Chan. I don't know if a lot of people actually know that Jackie actually worked with Bruce Lee. And it's actually an Enter the Dragon. And there's a part where Jackie goes, because Bruce Lee's like in the tunnel, and he goes up to, and there's a picture you can actually Google, and Bruce Lee fights Jackie. It's a real quick second and flips Jackie around and breaks Jackie's neck in the scene. And it's just one of those things you're like, you know, I didn't know that. I didn't even realize that. I didn't know that for many years until a couple years ago. And someone pointed out, I'm like, really? So, yeah, Jackie Chan actually worked with Bruce Lee. And there's actually a funny thing about Jackie telling, even in an interview, when Jackie worked with Bruce Lee, he actually, I think it was, he either got kicked or punched by Bruce Lee and he fell down. I think he was really a little busy and I think it was on his head and he was like, oh, 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 and he used that all day long. And Bruce was like, are you okay, Jackie? So he used that every time he'd pretend to go, oh, 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 oh. So he kept getting Bruce Lee's attention. And I guess there was a time that Jackie was going to go out and bowling and Bruce Lee went bowling with Jackie Chan. He was like, you know, just hear all that stuff. I'm trying to find out, let's see, there's stuff in the back of the book. Let's see. Okay. Because it also goes to the back of the book, and it says the epilogue, A Leap of Faith, and this was from what I was reading in the beginning, The blue of the sky and the sound of applause. I'm on my back looking up at the Rotterdam day, surrounded by a crowd of cheering extras. In the minutes after a stunt, after the adrenaline has surged and drained away, sometimes I see faces and ghosts. My father and mother in the home a continent away. Are they thinking of me? Are they worrying that this will be the time I won't come home? My wife and son leading their separate lives, wondering perhaps if this husband, father, stranger, will ever be a part of their world or always lost to the larger world outside. Leonard Ho, who believed in me when few people did, who supported me, taught me, and helped me grow up. Willie Chan, who has stood by me, good and bad, and been all a guide, mentor, and friend that anyone can ask for and have the fortune to receive. My brothers and sisters, big and little, whom I ate and slept and fought and argued and grew and learned. And Master, you made the sleep possible and all the ones before it. Without you, there would never have been a Jackie Chan. I hated you. I feared you. I love you, Master. Some things change. Some never will. It talks about, I wanted to find if it says all his, I was wondering if it says about all his aches and pains. I'm trying to find that page. I know there's a page in here. I got about like 10 minutes left, but I'm just going to say, I'm going to skip down. It says, here are some of my other serious injuries. Oh, Lord, Jackie, how are you still standing? It says, head. Other than the brain hemorrhage, listen to this. No, I'm not kidding. It says this in the book for his head. Other than the brain hemorrhage I suffered on Armor of God, I hit my head and injured it many times. I was actually knocked completely unconscious while working as a stuntman on Hands of Death. Okay. Ears. The Armor of God fall also left me hard of hearing one ear. Eye. On Drunken Master, my brow ridge was injured and nearly lost an eye. Oh, Jackie. nose. You'd think that someone up there had it in for me in my nose. It's bad enough it's so big to begin with, but I actually broke it at least 3 times on the Young Master, Project A, and most recently Mr. Nice Guy. Cheek. While making Supercut, I dislocated the cheekbone. Oh, Jackie! Cheekbone. I didn't even know you could do that. Teeth. Huang Zhang Li is a tremendous kicker, as I found out when he kicked me out one of my teeth accidentally while we're making Snake and Eagle's Shadow. Chin. I injured my chin on Dragon Lord. It was painful even talking for a while, which made it hard to direct, not to mention act. Throat. During the Young Master, I almost suffocated when I injured my throat. Oh, my God. Neck. I hurt my neck a lot, but my worst neck injuries happened during the Clock Tower Fall in Project 8 after I messed up a flip during Mr. Nice Guy. Shoulder. I dislocated my shoulder while making City Hunter. Hand. During the Protector, hurt my hand and finger bones, adding to injury to insult. Arm. While I was shooting a fight scene in Snake and Eagle's Shadow, my arm was accidentally slashed by a sword that should have a blunted edge. Blood went everywhere, and I fell down screaming, and the camera kept rolling. The real pain you see in the movie. You know what I'm going to be Googling after this on YouTube now? Let's see. Chest. On Armor of God 2, Operation Condor, I dislocated my sternum after falling from a hanging chain. There's another bone I didn't know you could dislocate it, but somehow I managed to do it. Back. I've had a lot of back injury during my movies, but the pole slide scene in Police Story almost paralyzed me when I nearly broke the 7th and 8th vertebrae in my spine. Oh, Jackie! Yeah. Pelvis. Also during the pole slide stunt, I dislocated my pelvis. I guess you wonder just how many weird bones a person can dislocate. Sometimes it seems like I've dislocated them all. Legs. I crushed my legs by shooting Crime Story after getting caught between 2 cars. Knee. I hurt my knees so often that I wonder whether there's even any cartilage left in them. If you think I have... See? This even says I wasn't kidding. This even says in the book, because remember I said before, in earlier movies with Jackie, he runs normally, and then he kind of, afterwards, in older films, like, he kind of, like, walks, kind of, runs kind of bow-legged a little bit, if that's the correct term. He runs different than when he... Yeah, it even says it right here. If you think I run a little funny, that's part of the reason why. It makes any stunt which I have to jump harder, but I do my best anyway. What do you expect? Would you expect anything less? One of my worst injuries occurred during City Hunter when I was shooting a skateboard chase. Foot. I broke my ankle while jumping onto a hovercraft in Rumble in the Bronx. And that was the one that I was talking about when he broke it. And they casted this rubber thing that they put over his whole leg, and it even covered his sneakers, so it looked like he didn't even have a cast. And it says, after the bone was set and cast was put on, I was told to stay off my feet until it healed. Yeah, right, because I had a movie to finish. I went back to the set and put on a sock on my broken foot, painted to look like a sneaker. Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to see some other stuff to read in here, but, Jackie's, I think he's been kind of celebrating. And he's going to be celebrating. I wish I could have been at that concert thing on Sunday. It's going to be a really, really nice weekend. I saved my cheat day for this weekend on Monday, and I actually took Monday off. And I know nobody in this whole world is going to understand it, and it's like I don't really, you know, I haven't gone anywhere in a while and stuff. And so, you know, this is something I'm going to do. I'm going to take next Monday off because Jackie Chan's birthday is April 7th, and I know people, maybe not a lot of people that understand this, but I'm going to have a Jackie Chan marathon. And I know a lot of people, they probably wonder why I don't talk so much about Jackie Chan that much anymore. I mean, once again, he's one of my idols, and I just love the guy to death. But, you know, I'm trying to do my own stuff, and he'll always, always inspire me. You know, many people love him throughout the world, and he's always going to be my favorite. And I'm looking to work with other people, and reality is, if I didn't have Jackie Chan to look up to my whole life, I would never be doing what I'm doing. Nothing's being handed to me, and I think since, you know, Jackie Chan's been a very hard inspiration person, it's led me to meet other people in my life, other, you know, stunt people and connecting with them. So it is a blessing to me to have an idol like Jackie. You know, he's a very humble man, and I guess the thing is, another reason why I think I like Jackie I mean, I know he's got injured a lot on movie sets because he has a lot of balance. He real, believe it or not, no, I know it's kind of, it sounds really kind of strange, but Jackie really has a lot of balance in his life because when he's just, you know, walking and doing interviews, he's just normal Jackie and he's very balanced. And that's another thing that I like about Jackie. And he gives a lot to the world. And, you know, maybe it's like something where those are things that I want to do and follow in Jackie's steps. I'll never be even like, I'll be lucky if I'm even like a tiny little bit percentage like Jackie. But, you know, to see him do the things he, you know, do in life, and it's just, you know, it's a blessing to have Jackie in this world. He gives so much. I mean, all the charities, you got to look up all the things that he does. And like I said, this man, I don't know when he sleeps. I know when he's on set. There's been pictures of him just like laying back and his mouth is like open, falling asleep on set. And I know that's when he sleeps, and he has like, he has this plane that he flies to everywhere. He must take naps on the plane, but I don't, he's got more energy than I do. And how old is Jackie? I mean, he's, just think about this. Jackie Chan's going to be 60 years old. This man has so much energy. He's, I'm telling you, he can almost outdo 20-year-olds. I mean, the man is amazing, amazing, amazing man. And, you know, if you really think about it, how he become a multi-billionaire, and he doesn't even have to do the things he does. He could be sitting back the rest of his life, riding high off the high horse, everything, but he doesn't. He gives back so much and helps out in this world. And if it's so wrong to look up to someone like that, I don't know what to tell anybody in this world. He's a beautiful human being. And if it teaches me anything to be more like him and try to do the things like I said, I can't do what he does, but because just trying to do what I do in my own way. And he's always going to be in my heart. And the thing is, ladies and gentlemen, I'm trying to help raise money for the Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame. And I know in the stunt world, I mean, they have separate award ceremony. And if you really look at, even on the IMDb page for the stunt community, if you look on films, what goes all the way down to the bottom of the list? You see the actors, makeup, wardrobe, and it's like the stunt people are all the way on the bottom of the list. And I was really hoping, you know, really, really hoping before Jackie's 60th birthday, I was able to get money for a museum. And I came on board as a Hollywood board of advisor. And Jackie has everything, you know, probably could think of. And the one thing when I found out Jackie was an inductee for the Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame, I really, really had wished that I could have gotten the money for the museum and him be able to tell him about it or something. But, you know, oh, wait, there's someone, wait a minute, there's someone calling in. Hold on for 1 second. Hello, caller, are you on the air?
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you were praising Jackie Chan, but you already answered that question before I got on the air.
Is this Joe? Oh, my gosh, my show is almost ending. How are you?
How are you doing? Well, how many minutes do you have left?
Just about 5 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, how are you?
How you doing? See, it doesn't say that since when BTR changed over their format. You know what it says on your page? It says live 3 hours ago. It doesn't say that you've got any time left. So BTR is messing with people who are paying good money.
Oh my gosh! And I've been having problems loading pictures, and someone's trying to take care of that for me. That's why I'm like, I'm trying to make sure everything's okay. You know, I mean,
yeah, well,
you know,
Jack,
I'm
Shelley, you're
going to
have more. You're going to have more problems in the future. BTR has gone to hell. They're messing with everybody's shows that I've been on. They cut people off. They disconnect people. I don't know what it is. The webmasters must come from some sort of zoo because they're really messing up. So I'm not surprised that you're having problems either.
Well, at least I'm still on the air, but there's other backup things that I'm working on. There's the live stream that I know someone has to show there. So there's other things that I'm looking at just in case. So, but for now, I mean, I've done almost about, I think, 160 shows.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's Streakers. There's Streakers.com. There's about a few sites. If you Google streaming forums, talk forums, stuff like that, you get about at least a half dozen shows or sites that are similar to BTR. BTR used to be the best, in my opinion, but I don't know what happened. It's just gone straight downhill.
Oh, I'll have to, look in that, because I was, I know, I can get guests for my show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can get, a lot of the stunt guys for the shows, and they've been coming back on my show, so I'm very lucky with that. So I made a lot of connections, so it's really nice.
Have you taken advantage of LinkedIn and Facebook?
I won't go back on LinkedIn. I use Facebook quite a lot, though.
Okay. If you use Facebook properly, you'll get a lot of a lot of followers, and then you can direct them to your radio show, your new one. Because So it's useful that way. How come you don't like LinkedIn? I was thinking of joining LinkedIn.
No, it's just because it's just I don't, because people were only connecting with me to get to other people. They weren't really talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of got, I didn't think that was right, because I was making connections for myself, so it's kind of I didn't like that. They would just, it's kind of my connections, I'm working hard on my own. And I'm I'm not trying to be mean, but it's kind of why even bother connecting with me?
They only want to go through you to get to somebody in Hollywood,
So I'm kind of I'm not doing that, so I deleted my account. So it's my own personal thing, and I was I could have that on there, but I rather keep, private stuff between me and other people, because then it's an honor code, I don't bother them, and I've been building up a trust with the stunt community, so that's kind of a big deal to me,
Right. Have you thought about, do you have any blogs? Because you can actually put up a free blog using WordPress, and you can get a lot of people going to your blog that way. And then if you have a plugin which allows them to actually make comments on your blog, you'll build up an audience that way, and then you can direct it to your radio show, and then you can use your radio show to direct them back to your blog, so it works in a circular fashion.
Yeah, there's a lot of things I'm working on. I've been working on, working out and stuff, so I'm I'm thinking of become a fitness model.
You're working out? You don't need to work out.
Yeah.
Well, you fat?
Yeah,
well, you turned on 20, put on
get...
20 pounds since the last time I talked to you?
No, I lost the weight. No, I lost the weight because I have a special way of eating now, so now I want to get a six-pack. I'm doing everything by myself. I'm training myself mostly, and we're getting down to the nitty-gritty with health care. Do you know what I'm saying? It's something that, the film that I've been working on is, everybody, I don't want to just make it about me. I mean, everybody, it's a film family. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's kind of like independent films. Everything comes out of their own pocket. So it's a whole bunch of, people that are working on it. I don't want to make it sound like it's just me. It's a whole bunch of people. Do you know what I'm saying? It's a film family. And they're working on, with the music and everything. And we're really getting down to a lot of the stuff that's going to really, really start mattering now.
Well, good. Yeah. Okay, I'm just sorry the BTR is messing with you, but don't worry, it's messing with everybody. That's why I'm not on BTR.
Yeah, I know. I was I just did it the best I can. I was if I can be on for almost 2 hours and there's no problem, I try to handle it the best I can. And I said, well, this whole week, Wednesday and Ninja Sunday, I'm dedicating to Jackie Chan because it's his 60th birthday. So that's something that I wanted to do, is big inspiration, and he'll always be an inspiration. If it wasn't because of him, having him as my inspiration, I wouldn't be doing half the things I'm doing right now.
Yeah. You know what? I can't see Jackie Chan being 60. I think he'll always be a young action star,
Yeah, he still is. I still consider him young. He's he'll always... To me, he's just always going to be Jackie Chan. I don't care what anybody says. I'm always going to respect him no matter what age he is, because he's given the world so much. So he's always going to be in my heart.
Well, I'm going to go, Shelley, because I just want to say hi. So, all right?
Well, hi, Joe, and you have a good evening.
You too. Take care now.
Nice
bye-bye.
Nice to hear from you. Bye-bye. Whoa. I didn't really realize
excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, that's not even disconnecting his call. So I do apologize if you hear a little staticky now. The show's about to end in a few minutes, and it's really sweet. I get every once in a while I do have someone calling in. Joe was actually one of my
first callers when I actually started back, you know, doing the show. And in August, I'll be doing it for about 2 years. And the blessing is being able to, you know, connect with people that I've, you know, looked up to my whole life, a lot of the stunt people, and feel, you know, I'm really thankful for that from the bottom of my heart, that these people that I've watched in films, all the ninjas that I've, like, loved their films, and I've always said I've never wanted to be Bobby. I've always wanted to be a ninja. And it's something to be able to sit and talk, and it's like almost be able to, like, live my childhood over again. So, see, it is a blessing. You know, loving Jackie Chan, it's a blessing. And it sounds so silly. It sounds so lame. But, you know, that's why I'm doing these two shows tonight, dedication to Jackie Chan, and Sunday, Jackie Chan's birthday. And, you know, if he's in Hong Kong, it's, I think, 12 hours ahead. So, you know, I have Sunday, Monday off. It's going to be nice. And maybe I'll get a little bit of Chinese food and have cake. I could have some cake. And maybe I'll have a little bit to drink. Not really that much because I really can't drink. I'll be on the floor. But anyway, yeah, that's the show for tonight. And thank you all for listening. And everyone, have a good evening. And Sunday, Ninja Sunday, once again, to celebrate Jackie Chan's birthday. Wow, I just can't believe that the show's all over with. So anyway, everyone, have a good night. I turn.